on the Rebel Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. Live from Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Welcome to the Runnin' Rebels Basketball Coaches Show, brought to you by Chevron. It's proven no gasoline gets better mileage than Chevron with Techron. Care for your car. And by State Farm. Go with the one that's here to help life go right. Talk to an agent today at 800 State Farm. Now, here are your hosts, John Sandler and Curtis Terry.
Welcome once again to Bailiwick here inside the Orleans Hotel and Casino, the Runner Rebel Coaches Show, featuring head coach TJ Otzelberger, John Sandler, Curtis Terry, and the head coach with you as the Rebels get back from Reno. A tough one last night. Team struggled on offense, and Reno's got a couple of guards who are really, really good. And hostile environment, big crowd there at Lawler, and it all added up to a tough night for the Runner Rebels, but an opportunity to bounce back in an enormous way on Sunday afternoon at the Thomas and Mack, 1 o'clock tip against the only undefeated team in the nation, San Diego State. Curtis, go up to Reno, and you know it's gonna be tough up there. And we talked about it before the game. Coach, you talked about it on our pregame interview. Rebels were going to have to hit shots, and with the exception of Amari through most of the game and Bryce primarily in the second half, guys just struggled. And it was a rough night, and you know, it's just one of those nights.
Early on, it was going to be important based on how we believed they would play us, that we knocked down a few perimeter shots to spread the floor a little bit and open up the defense. Anytime we drove the basketball, they ran off multiple offensive players to try to congest the paint, daring us to pass and then knock down the shot. And when we were successful at finding the open player, we didn't capitalize on some of those opportunities early. It put us in a bit of a deficit. And when you're playing a team like UNR on the road that has that offensive spurt ability, I really think the difference in the game was two different times where they hit three threes in a row. That just gives you that quick 9-point spurt. That ends up being pretty substantial in a game like that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, Rebels battled back so well to start the second half, got the lead down to 2 at one point, a couple other times, had it to 1 possession or 2 possessions. And as we've seen a couple of times this year, Kurt just couldn't kind of get up all the way up the mountain.
Yeah, no, just kind of struggled there at times to try to, like you say, you push the rock up the hill and it rolls back, whatever your philosophical analogy is there, John.
Sisyphean, yes.
What he said. But I'm more excited just to be back in Vegas. I don't know about you guys, but Reno's an awesome place, right? The biggest little city in the world, except for when you lose. That place is not much fun. But for me, you guys can probably tell us, I know John knows this, I'm a film dude. Like, I replay stuff over and over and over. But for me, last night, that's one of those games where I don't want no part of it. Because, again, if we throw in a couple threes early, I think that changes the whole flow of the game. And obviously, we've kind of gotten a hole. But the guys battled. And for me, they win a lot of categories on the box sheet. But the one that ultimately hurt them, obviously, was the made shots. And the one thing that I figured that we were going to have an issue with is when we couldn't make a huge stretch in terms of points in the paint. Because even when we have not made shots in the past, the guys have still been aggressive getting to the paint and finishing. But the heck with it. They get that one. We'll get them back here in a couple weeks.
Time to turn your attention to San Diego State.
Yes, yes. Enough of the R word for me.
Well, Coach, you know, you look at that. The way this team has responded, the way you and your staff have adjusted your prototypical style to this team, and I think there's a huge amount of credit that's due to you and your staff. And you have to do it also on a game-by-game basis as well because of the relative inconsistency sometimes with this team.
Our team, to be successful, we've got to be very intentional defensively. We have to limit our opponent to one shot. And we have to get out and go and transition and score early. We've got to keep the ball on the move. We've got to play with pace. And then when we're not successful, because we're not a tremendous shooting team from the perimeter, we've got to hammer the boards and get second chance opportunities. We don't have 10 different ways to win a game. We have a very specific way that we need the game to go, and we need to impose our will to make the game go that way. And as we move forward, whether it was the game last night or going into the game Sunday, they know that that's what we're trying to do as well, and they're trying to take us out of it. I think we've proven and garnered the respect of others that we're a physical team. Our guys play hard. We're going to go to the glass. Even last night, we won the rebounding margin by a substantial
11 rebounds.
11 yep. rebounds. And so the hustle plays and those things are there. We're going to have to cash in a little bit more on some shots in timely situations. And if we can do that, we'll continue to move forward. But we've got to live at the foul line. We've got offensive rebound. We've got to be a little better defensively than we were last night, especially some transition threes and things they hit. And then when we're not successful to make a shot, we've got to be tenacious on the glass and get other opportunities.
I believe 18 offensive rebounds last night, another huge number. At your South Dakota State teams, were they great rebounding teams as well? Or when you had your best teams there, were they so talented offensively the emphasis was elsewhere?
Well, on the offensive end, we were in the top. I think we were third or fourth in the country last year at not turning the ball over. And we were top five in three-point shooting, top five in assists, top five in three-point percentage. So we weighed a lot more of what we did to be successful on shooting the three, trying to get the transition three, and knowing that when we did that, we would have those spurts where we'd make three or four in a row at different points in the game and kind of blow it open. And so the choices we made offensively were a little bit different, and we didn't go to the offensive boards as hard. We felt like it was better if the opponent always had to play against our set half-court defense. And basically, if we got the shots we wanted from the perimeter and we turned it into a three-point contest, we were going to win that 19 out of 20, and that's kind of what we tried to do. Now we've kind of had to retool and adapt our personnel and put our guys in the situation where we feel they can be most successful. We've seen how that formula can work. We also know that we can't deviate from that formula if we hope to be successful.
You mentioned the ways the Rebels have to win games and referred to the fact there are only a couple of ways and they involve specific things. Does that make the team a little bit easier to plan for and to guard?
It might. Look, we saw Wyoming played zone the entire game. New Mexico or San Jose played zone the entire game. New Mexico played zone the entire game. Reno played zone, you know, a third to a half of the game last night. Everybody is saying, we don't think you can shoot all that well. Now, the difference was against San Jose and against New Mexico, we never let them get set because we got stops and we flew it up even on made field goals. There was times we had shots up before their defense got back. Sometimes on your home court, that's easier to do. You have a little more energy from the crowd, the fans, the comfortable environment. We need to still be able to do that on the road. But I think when teams are going to do that, whether it's employ that philosophy or whether play zone, we got to fly it up. We got to execute. We got to hammer the boards. They know it's coming. We know it's coming. We just need to be better at it.
When you were playing, Kurt, makes a lot of sense, as most things Coach says do.
All things Coach says.
I don't know. He and I have had some conversations, and I've left scratching my head, but that's because he's smarter than me. Curtis, when you were playing, did you have a sense of a real good sense of the game plan that the other team had against you and the adjustments they were making in the game? And able to, you know, it's because it's a chess match. It's a series of adjustments that happen, whether it's at timeouts or just during the flow of the game. As a point guard, did you have a sense of how they were adjusting and what you needed to do to counter it?
Yeah, but I think that's saying yes is it's not as easy as that. For me, like I said, I was a film junkie because I wasn't the most athletic guy, so I needed to get an edge, and that was mentally in terms of preparation, knowing the scouting report, personnel. But then also we had the luxury of having a group of guys that played together for numerous years and have continuity, and it makes it easier to know what I'm going to get out of Wink Adams or Rene Rougeau, Joe Darger, whoever. And we knew just kind of the flow of the game and kind of what to do, what not to do. But for me, I had the luxury of playing and learning from two all-conference point guards before I took over. And I think that's a big thing in terms of just knowing when you need to push it out of backcourt, when you need to pull it back. When you need to try to get yourself a shot, or when you need to try to get somebody a specific shot, or heck, we need to get to the free throw line just to calm things down and put some points on the board. But I think you just you learn it. It becomes an innate skill and ability, but it takes time. And we've been talking about just the progression of Marvin, and he's, I mean, light years better now than he was 6 weeks ago, but that just takes time, and it's trial and error, and just having the opportunity to learn from your mistakes. And just for him, it's a situation where he was kind of thrown into it. You got to figure it out on the fly, but heck, if that's getting thrown into it and figuring it out on the fly, I'm all for it. but I think with this group, I think Coach is doing a great job, and let's be real. The guys over the last 5 weeks are going on a tear.
Yeah.
Can't win them all. And it's, for me, in my perspective, we just didn't make enough shots.
Yeah.
It's not like they weren't hustling or getting after it. So, I mean, it is what it is from my perspective. And I can say that and sleep somewhat okay, except for last night. But it's easier said than done. But you definitely have to have a good touch on the game and have a feel for the pulse to know kind of the ebbs and flows. Trust me, it's not easy by any means.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we sometimes forget, especially as well as the Rebels have been playing, is that there's still a lot of inexperience, a lack of experience in certain key positions. And I think we saw a little bit of it last night in the sense that we saw some frustration fouls. Guys would make a mistake. I just remember Bryce and Marvin both made a mistake, and then, you know, immediately, and Curtis, we talked about it, immediately reached out and kind of made a foul that you wouldn't want to see him make. And it's out of frustration. It's out of the desire to succeed and to play well. How do you react to those plays as a coach?
Those guys are still learning as we go along. They're both sophomores and both young sophomores who played very sparingly as freshmen. And they've both done a tremendous job as we've put them in spots. I think they've continued to work hard. Their development has continued to improve. But they're still young sophomores, and at times you're going to have those things. For me, I put my trust and confidence in them. We push them hard. We challenge them. And when the game is on, we believe in them, and we give them the confidence to go out there and play to the best of their ability. They're not going to be perfect. There's going to be things that happen. And then we use those as teachable moments in film or in my office today where we talk about them, we learn from them, and we move on. And I think more than anything, it's that process of continuing to get those individuals better and improve. Getting that game experience is invaluable. That's how you get better. Those guys are stepping up in a major way. So I look at it, and it's part of the process.
Do you have to remind yourself? I mean, because, you know, Curtis said you can't win every game, but at the same time, you intend to, you plan to, all of that stuff. Do you have to remind yourself of that during games occasionally?
I think we know going in, and I mean, I could probably tell you the San Diego State exactly how it's going to go from the start as well, what choices we'll make, what choices they'll make, and then how each team will look at adjusting if the choices don't go the way they want or they don't go the way we want. And so I think I have to just keep an open mind to this group because, like Curtis said earlier, it's a group of a lot of new guys coming together with a new coach. We're still very young in our journey together. And we're going to continue to grow. And so I think I just have to be adaptive to what they do well, what happens in situations, where we can teach, where we can grow, and where we can get better. And I think our guys have been a very captive audience, especially since, you know, mid to late December.
I think that's a tremendous perspective. And you wonder how a guy – you've been coaching for a long time, but in terms of a head coaching role and in a new situation, how did you develop that kind of a perspective on your approach to be a head coach and deal with all these young guys?
As you study young people, I think you realize that, especially with this generation, the most important thing I can do is to be a great listener so they know I love them, I care about them, I'll be there for them. Long after basketball stops bouncing, they need to know that I have that investment and that belief in them first and foremost. And then you're trying to put the team together. But I think players individually don't care what a coach knows or thinks he knows or wants to do until they really know you care about them.
Trust.
And that they're important and you build that trust. Yeah. So my journey has been one that for the 10 months I've been here, each day and probably – none as much as today where I met with almost every guy on our team for a reasonable or extended amount of time because when adversity hits, you have to prove to them again the trust. You have to prove that communication. They need to see me down in the locker room just hanging out. They need to, whether it's watching film, having a meal, walking with them, to know I'm in the trenches, because we get back to practice tomorrow morning and we have a very focused game plan. And I've got to make sure that when they come to practice tomorrow, that every little detail that we put in front of them, they absorb and they take it in, because it's going to be very important to us being successful. So I don't know any other way. I've been lucky to learn from some really good head coaches. Been fortunate to have guys like Lon Kruger and Tony Bennett as mentors outside the guys that I've worked for. And I just try to study how they work and emulate them as much as I can.
That's exactly why this guy's going to be successful here, Curtis, because of that sort of well-reasoned and sort of sanguine, calm perspective on the approach, and yet still have the fire and the discipline to do the things you have to do as a head coach at times. I'm thoroughly convinced of that, no question. Let's take a break. I have a different direction I want to go before we get to San Diego State. We'll get that in our next segment. Fans, remember, after the game or anytime, you can visit or click Findlay Toyota. Findlay Toyota, it's the largest Toyota dealer in Nevada. Ask for John Barr. He'll do anything to sell you a car. You are listening to the T.J. Otzelberger Show from Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Back here at Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel and Casino, the T.J. Otzelberger Radio Show, as the Runner Rebels have a little bit of an extra day to get ready for the only undefeated team in the country, San Diego State, coming to the Thomas and Mack, 1 o'clock Sunday. We'll be on the air at 12:30 with Runner Rebel warm-up and want to see a huge crowd. Rebels are going to need it. This is a really good San Diego State basketball team. We'll get to them in just a moment. John Sandler, Curtis Terry, and head coach T.J. Otzelberger with you. Coach, I mentioned I wanted to ask you kind of a little bit of an off-the-wall question, but we were talking about
– Uh-oh.
We were taught – not that off-the-wall, not like the questions you asked me, but the going forward as you build this program, and you talked about, you know, building trust with the guys and then putting the team together, you've got a lab where you could create your perfect basketball team, your perfect starting five, and then let's go to the bench as well. What does that team look like? And I mean, you know, the easy answer is 11, 6, 8 guys who can knock down threes at 40% and, you know, run like the wind and aren't afraid of anything and can rebound like crazy and guard, whatever. But what is it in reality? What does that ideal roster look like for you?
It starts with identifying character, basketball character, work capacity, passion, and love for the game. I think everybody assumes that if you get to Division I level, that means you love basketball. That means you dedicate your whole self to it and that your character is such that the choices and decisions you make, classroom, community, and everything are reflective of that as well. I think the teams that I've been around that are the most successful are the teams I study that seem to win year in and year out. They have those attributes. They love to work. And they love to work together. And I think that would have to be at the core of that team that you'd build. When you look at, as basketball players, you know, you said a bunch of 6'8 guys that can shoot 40% from three. That sounded pretty good. I would say positional size, guys that have the physicality and size at their position, guys that have a high basketball IQ, that think the game, that study the game. Curtis talked about it. When you're around players that watch extra film, that study personnel tendencies, things that the other team does, that's so valuable. But it's not a trait that everybody has. So trying to find that, because that enacts winning, and certainly that's really important. I also think guys that they put the team before themselves, and their support networks understand that, because we're going to tell guys the truth. We're going to hold them accountable, and it needs to be. They need to have a support network that's going to be on board with that. That when adversity hits in or sets in, that they're not going to run from problems. They're not going to make excuses. They're going to roll up their sleeves and work harder. But, yeah, I mean, look, I think we want to be one of those teams that has those guys that on a given night we've got a lot of different ways we can beat you. We can be physical. We can beat you that way. We can make a bunch of threes. We can beat you that way. The ball is moving around. We're zipping it around with a team that has a high IQ that – not only is willing passers, but loves to pass. We have guys coming off the bench that have a very specific niche, but they're all stars in that niche, whether it be a rebounder, a screener, a defender, a shot maker, a backup point guard, guys that really buy in and understand what those roles are like. And that's hard to identify in the recruiting process as well when you live in an era of everything's instant gratification. Yeah. We've got to be very intentional to find those type of people. But I think we can put that group together. I think programs like Virginia, Villanova, they find a way to do it year in and year out, and their success breeds success, and that's what we're trying to do.
I think that's fascinating. I think it indicates the level of understanding Coach has of the game, but also the level of understanding he has of people. And Curtis, I know in your career you played with guys who kind of lived on both sides of that. Fortunately for you, most of the guys you played with were on the good side of that, the guys who did love playing basketball and put in the extra work. And you mentioned a bunch of them. The one that immediately comes to mind to me is Joel.
Oh, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. Joel Anthony. Coach, I don't know if you're familiar with, I mean, his NBA career, sure, but when he was a college player, I mean, he showed up at UNLV, he couldn't catch the basketball. He finishes his senior year. He blocked 13 shots in one game and, you know, was an all-conference defensive player and a really solid offensive player and then had a 10-year NBA career. A remarkable transformation.
Well, I think that's the basketball character and the work ethic. All those things come in because there's guys, when they come to you, that are a blank palette and they have so much potential, but very few ever get to fulfill their basketball potential. And Joel's a prime example. We've got a coaching staff that's very uniquely qualified to develop young men, I think, as basketball players and as men off the court. And we want to bring in guys that, you know, can be in our process and develop that way. And Joel would be one of those guys that you just love to have because you can see the strides he's made every year because of how hard he worked.
Hardest worker I've ever met, 100%. I mean, first guy in the gym, last guy out of the gym, redshirted, is going into his senior year and didn't need to, but said, I'll take one for the team. I'll work on my game. Best thing ever. Yeah. Obviously, that kind of spurred our success. But I didn't always get to play with those guys. When I first got to UNLV, there was a good handful of guys that didn't fall in line, and they got shown the door very quickly.
Yeah.
But I think, again, it just takes time because we have to learn those things. And like Coach said, I mean, just the trust. For me as a player, if I knew that you cared about me, asked me how my day was going, how was your family, whatever it is, I'll die for you. But if you just come in there and just barking at me about basketball, I'm like, dude, there's more to life. Prime example why Bobby Knight, when he was at Texas Tech, there's no way I was opening that mail when it came. Just didn't fit me. But again, I think it's easier said than done. But for me, it's all about that stuff off the court. I mean, everybody's got skill and talent and size and athleticism, but who can really put what they have to use and really work at that and make it even stronger and better? Because like Coach said, I mean, everybody is good if you're 6'8", and yeah, but there's guys that are 6'8" and didn't get it done versus guys that are 6'6" that did.
We've seen some examples at UNLV, and you know, most schools have it. But Coach, that blueprint is incredibly insightful. But you made reference to the fact that a lot of this stuff is very difficult to pick out and very difficult to identify in the recruiting process, partly because you're recruiting 16- and 17-year-old kids who probably haven't figured out any of that yet, and you're just kind of looking at instincts and things like that. What do you look for? Are there specific things? Are there specific practices you and your staff have in the recruiting process to try to identify that? You talked about the core in terms of love of basketball and commitment and character. Are there specific things you do during the recruiting process to try to identify that?
Don't tell all the secrets, Coach. Don't give everything away here.
Well, I always ask the question pretty early on, you know, what their why is. Why do they play? What is their the reason they play basketball, what's their passion for it? And I think you'll get a lot of unique answers, whether it's I play for my family or, shoot, sometimes someone might say, hey, I play just because I happen to be tall. I don't really like playing at all. And I think that tells you a story too. I also ask oftentimes, who's a part of your support network? For us to be successful with our process, we need to have one message and one vision for how that needs to go. And so sometimes when there's 10 or 15 people in that equation, that can get a little bit stuffy and the message can be diluted. So those may not be the right players for us. Ultimately, we don't tell people in the recruiting process, you're going to come here and we're going to build buildings with your name on it and statues and run isolation you. We tell them it's going to be really hard work. You're going to have to sacrifice. You're going to have to commit. It's not going to come easy or early. And that cuts the recruiting pool in half right away. And then we figure out who's left, because I'd rather get through those hard questions and get those answers before they get to campus. There's nothing worse than getting here and they're in a spot where they can't be successful and where they're not the best fit for our program.
Yeah, it has to be a little bit of metaphysics, of magic almost, trying to figure out. You mentioned the support group and all the different aunts and uncles and whomever can get involved, AAU coaches and all of that. But at the same time, I would imagine there are cases where you walk into a home or you see in a gym and you just somebody kind of just shines. Somebody just stands out. Family situation, what have you.
Well, there's a lot of talented players out there. I can go back through the years I've been doing this, and some of the most talented in terms of how tall, how long their arms, how high they jump, and what somebody perceives as their upside, where you can tell early on that young man's never going to get where you think he should because of these distractions and these variables in the way. And those things, if they're winning out and you can see those signs, they usually always win out. So it's unfortunate that all young people don't have a very tight support network to lean on and people who are honest with them and tell them the truth. I think for us, we've got to evaluate that early, because if the first time someone's telling them the truth is when they get to college, it's going to be a rude awakening. And so when guys play in winning high school programs, when guys play for coaches that coach them hard, those are attractive qualities, because in this day and age, there's a lot of kids that are lured to play on certain AAU teams because you kiss their butt and you tell them something that they want to hear instead of the truth, or you placate to them. And those are the type of things that won't happen in our program. So just, it's not, you know, you're not really comparing apples to apples. So we've got to make sure that we do our work that way.
That sounds great. Coach, before we let you go, and we know we got to get you home to see the kids, real quick on San Diego State. They're undefeated. Obviously, they're playing great basketball, much more offensively skilled than San Diego State teams have been in quite a while. Malachi Flynn, a big part of that. What makes them so good? What makes them so difficult to handle on either end of the floor?
From an offensive standpoint, you know, they play essentially a four-guard lineup the majority of the time. All four guys can dribble, pass, and shoot. They're all guys that can make plays off the bounce. They're all guys that can knock down shots. And at the center position, they've got a highly skilled, really a forward who can step out and shoot the basketball, or he can post and score on the rim. So they oppose an offensive team that really you've got five guys that on a given night that can beat you. So it's hard to prepare to stop one thing or one guy or take one thing away. That's what makes them successful offensively. They don't make mistakes. They don't get caught over dribbling the basketball, and their shot selection is really sound. On the defensive side, I think they're still more elite there. Maybe not even some of their teams defensively maybe have more physically imposing bodies and length than they do, but they very rarely miscover a ball screen coverage or miscommunicate in transition. They're pretty sound. So I think the best way to win is to start out by not beating yourself, and they're a team that doesn't beat themselves. They don't make glaring mistakes. You've got to just gradually chip away and chip away and stay the course if you're going to be successful to beat them.
Well, the Rebels have an opportunity on Sunday, 1 o'clock at the Thomas and Mack. Place needs to be rocking. We'll be on the air at 12:30 with Runner Rebel warm-up. But, Coach, I know you're looking forward to it. It is a real rivalry, and the Runner Rebels in San Diego State have gone at it. The Aztecs have had the Rebels' number for quite a while now. Rebels have only had one win in the last few years, so I know you're looking to change that.
Absolutely. No, it's a great opportunity. We appreciate everybody coming out and showing their support. Our guys are going to leave it on the floor. We're going to bring it on Sunday, and we need all hands on deck to come out with this win.
Runner Rebels 6-2 in Mountain West Conference play, but they're not the only 6-2 in Mountain West Conference play. The Lady Rebels are as well, and we're going to have the head coach, K.O., will join us when we come back. Coach, appreciate it. Say hi to the kids. And we'll see you on Sunday.
Thank you much.
Head coach T.J. Otzelberger visiting with us. We'll take a break, come back. K.O. will join us, talk Lady Rebel basketball. When we come back, you're listening to the Runner Rebel Coaches Show from Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. We are back. Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino, the Runner Rebel Coaches Show. Runner Rebels getting ready for San Diego State, last undefeated team remaining in the country. Sunday, 1 o'clock tip. We'll be on the air at 12:30 with Runner Rebel warm-up. John Sandler, Curtis Terry with you. Now joined by the coach of the other 6-2 Mountain West Conference basketball team, Kathy Olivier, or as others call her, Katie Oliver, or whatever. How often do people just mess up your last name?
I get it a lot. That's why I like when people just say Coach KO.
Coach KO.
I'm good with that.
It's Coach KO.
It's easy.
Her team has won 7 of its last 8 ball games, including a buzzer beater last night over Reno, over at the Cox, and an exciting ball game. You're 6-2 in Mountain West Conference play. It was a young team, struggled early, but kind of like the men, have begun to figure it out.
Super young team. We have 7 freshmen on the team.
That's next year for the men, folks, by the way.
And 8 new players, so that's a lot of new bodies. And, you know, when you have older players, they teach the young ones how to do things, and right now it's the coaches teaching everybody. And that's okay. I mean, my coaching staff is amazing. They've done an unbelievable job. The players have bought in, and I think that's why we're on a little bit of a roll right now. Everyone's really listening, and they know how to play defense. They know how to play offense. I mean, we were literally teaching them how to catch passes and throw passes early on, and now these players are committed, and they want to be good.
That's terrific. And you heard TJ talking about if he had to design a team, and he focused – at least primarily, not exclusively, but primarily on the character stuff and the stuff in the head and in the heart rather than the basketball skills.
I love that he says that. I think that's really cool for a men's program. Not that men's and women's programs are that much different, but we do that a lot too. We want good people. We want to surround ourselves by good people. We want people who want to be good teammates. We want people who love the game. I know he talks about that a lot. And people are good and committed in the classroom, and that's when you have a good combination and a good recipe for success.
Those are sort of the basic underlying things that would apply across the board, almost to any sport, not just basketball. How is recruiting in women's basketball different than it is in men's basketball?
I mean, men's basketball, I don't recruit the guys, but I feel like it's a very aggressive you better get the players if you want to still be a coach. I mean, you got to make sure that you're making some very good decisions. I think women's basketball, it's very aggressive also. I mean, Caitlin Collier does a lot of our recruiting. She sets me up for this is who we want to go for. We go for those players, and we have to be aggressive also. For us, we like to get a lot of locals because we feel like if we get locals, we can get somewhat of a crowd. And to be honest, you got a high school team that's one of the top high school teams in the country here. So
yeah, you got a powerhouse down the road.
You got a powerhouse.
That's awesome.
Come on. And we've gotten 3 or 4 players out of Centennial High School. We're proud of that. We just signed someone from Desert Oasis High School. I mean, we feel good about what we're doing. We want to keep the top players home. We work very hard to do that.
Curtis, interaction with women's basketball. I know now in your current profession, you do work a lot with high school sports. Mm-hmm. What have you noticed about women's basketball in general and then the Lady Rebel program that appeals to you?
So specifically, I prefer to coach women than guys. True, honest statement.
I knew I liked you.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. So I previously coached high school girls basketball back in Seattle before we moved back here. And didn't know what I was getting into, but ended up loving it just because for me, the group I had, they would do anything for you. They, whatever you asked of them, and there was no attitude or why are we doing this or looking you off and thinking they know everything. Whereas guys, they do all those things. It drives me nuts because I know you don't know everything. And so for me, just the
wait, just so you know, excuse me, but women think they know everything too. Okay.
But that's more off the court.
I'm smart. So, like I was saying, but no, for me, so my experience, it just, they drove me to be even better and to coach better just because they do whatever you ask. They don't question it. They believe in you and they trust in you. And they work their butt off. And me personally, I think that female women basketball players are better basketball players than men.
Just because of the focus on
skill set, fundamental.
Set, yeah.
The only difference is guys are super athletic and not all girls are. I mean, if they were.
So John Wooden used to say he loved women's basketball because they were fundamentally sound, where the guys can just slam dunk and do things a lot easier because they're so athletic. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the folks that you've brought in. You've mentioned all those new players. RJ Wade,
she's on fire.
Two-time conference player of the week already, or maybe more than that?
No, one time. But here's her deal. She was sixth player of the year last year.
Okay.
She was playing behind some very talented post players for us in the past, and she's come a long way. We've worked with her. She's a pleaser. I think that's what you're saying about women, too. They're pleasers. We have a lot of pleasers on our team. They want to work hard. And she's someone who has worked so hard and really has gotten good on the basketball court. She is fifth in the country in double-doubles this year.
Wow.
So she's on fire. Last night she was one rebound short of another double-double. So she's been doing some good things. She's been providing some excellent leadership for us, too, and that's something we look for her. Yeah.
What about Leticia Smith is the one who hit the game winner last night.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about some of the other gals on the team.
T.T. Smith has done a great job. She's hit a couple game winners this year, which I can't believe we've had so many close games that where we need game winners. I'm not into that as a coach, but it's
working. Yeah, the men don't know anything about that. They're one more overtime game, and they set a program record for most overtime games in a season.
I mean, that's unreal. Jeez. And it's stressful, let me tell you. But she's doing a great job. She's really clutch down the stretch. She wants to have the ball in her hands at the end of games. She hit it was like a 10-footer last night, nothing but net. She got tackled after she made that shot. I mean, it was a really fun game. Clearly, our rivalry with, I call him Reno. I know we're not supposed to, UNR. But we had a lot of the student athletes there. The administration took a lot of pride in getting the student athletes there. And it was fun for our team to play in front of not just our fans, which we love our fans, but for them to play in front of their peers. They were loving it. We had, you know, men's tennis there. I'm going to miss people, so I don't know why I just went there. But volleyball was
there.
A lot
of folks were there.
A lot of the student athletes, and it was just a really fun atmosphere to play in.
That's terrific. And the women deserve that because they work incredibly hard. And it doesn't – women's basketball, for the most part, doesn't get anywhere near the coverage and the notoriety and you know, it doesn't appeal to people with short attention spans. Let's put it that way.
Very
true. Who are all about just the dunk and the three and the fast pace. So it's nice to hear that there's a nice crowd, and it should happen more often.
Very true. And you asked me to talk about a couple people, and I need to talk about more because we just talked about locals.
Right.
Our locals are doing a great job. I mean, we have one young lady who is a 4.0 student, and she does her job on the court every game we can count on her, and it's Bailey Thomas, who's someone who takes so much pride in her defense, and she doesn't get the notoriety as someone like RJ because RJ's getting all those double-doubles. I mean, Bailey's out there grinding defensively and doing an unbelievable job of stopping our opponent's best player, and there's a reason that we are, I think we're like fifth or sixth in the country in defense.
Wow.
And Bailey is setting the tone for that. So she's doing a great job. Justice has been on fire lately. She's another gal from Centennial High School who's, you know, at New Mexico in front of 5,000 fans. I'm jealous of their fans. If we could get 5,000 in Cox, I would be in heaven. But she knocked down, and she had over 20 points in New Mexico, and it was just, it's fun to watch. Mel Isabel, she's from
Rebels won that game by Lady Rebels won that game by 17, by the way,
which is huge on the road to do. But Mel Isabel and Caviana Brown are doing a great job at the point guard spot. I mean, there's so many different people I can talk about, and that's pretty much why we've been successful right now, because we have a lot of people that are stepping up for us right now.
I'm amazed you play. I mean,
I know
that bench.
I know
you needed the auxiliary bench for all the people you play. You run them out there. That is a deep squad.
And it, you know what? I think, again, that's the reason why we're successful. We don't have a lot of people that are getting major minutes. Last year, if you looked at our team, we had three players in the top 15 with most minutes played in the conference. This year, I just told the team, I said, this is the beauty of our team. I looked at the top 15 minutes, and I said, no UNLV Lady Rebels. And I think that's good because we can keep them fresh. and still get people to contribute and provide something when they step on the floor.
That's awesome. We got to take a break. We got another segment. You stick around with us?
Sure.
Please.
Let's do it.
Please. We will step aside. We'll come back. Our final segment coming up. Coach KO is going to stay with us. We're going to talk to her about all sorts of stuff when we come back. You're listening to the Runner Rebel Coaches Show from Bailiwick inside the Orleans Hotel Casino on the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Back here at Bailiwick, our final segment. Runner Rebels getting ready for San Diego State on Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock tip. Curtis and I will have all the action starting at 12:30 with Runner Rebel warm-up. But we are visiting with Coach KO, talking Lady Rebel basketball right now. Let's see, what should we talk about? How's your golf game?
Oh, gosh. I have not played golf forever. I think the last time I played was with you.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm serious.
That was a million years ago. Don't play us in a scramble.
No.
Just word to the wise. Word to the wise. You don't want any part of us in the scramble.
You're good.
You don't want any part of us. How's the league this year? Conference, I mean, typically it's been, what, New Mexico, San Diego State?
Fresno's been up there. Boise State has been very successful.
Wyoming occasionally has a decent
Wyoming's good. Game, right? It's very difficult to play at Wyoming. So sad we don't have to go there this year.
I know.
It's lucky. Very,
yeah.
You're not missing anything.
Yeah. We were already there.
Listen, we've been lucky and very fortunate to have charters, so life has been good for us. So
by the way, did one of your girls leave an iPad on the plane last trip?
We found one on the plane. Yeah. It's the same plane, by the way.
Oh, you know what? I think they did. I'm going to ask. I'm going to get back to you guys on that.
I'm not sure who wound up with it.
Amir.
I saw, wasn't he on the standing on the street offering it like $120, something like that?
Don't do that.
First offer, something
right,
like
that's
that.
That's way too high for where we were at. No, I'm curious about Coach. You came to UNLV in 2008, right?
A while ago.
Yeah. It's not that long ago, but you played at UNLV as well.
Yes.
Correct. How does it feel for you coming back and playing coming back and coaching where you played, but also just the longevity in which you've had so far in your tenure here?
I absolutely love being at my alma mater. I'm very, very proud to be the head coach here. You know, I still have a couple of the fans that watched me come to our games, and that's I love that. I mean, the Quirks, Ted and Maria,
they
are VIP courtside seat ticket holders, and they come to a lot of the games. They were there last night loving it. I mean, it's just fun. I take a lot of pride in what we do. I think we've done an amazing job. I have an unbelievable coaching staff. And we, like I said, we take an immense amount of pride of building a good program, having quality people play for us. And I feel really, really good about that.
You're in a stage in the program now, as you mentioned, a lot of new and especially a lot of young players. Are you excited, sort of almost reinvigorated to take this group and add to it and really – kind of launch the relaunch the program?
I mean, we have a great group of freshmen, very young talent, high basketball IQs, and I think we have a great base to work from. When I say that, we've had some excellent seniors. Last year, we were clearly a lot of seniors that all graduated, which I'm very proud of. We're all very proud of that. But these young freshmen are going to be good, and they have good leaders. We have three captains with RJ, Letitia Smith, and Bailey Thomas, and they've done a great job of making sure that the young players understand what being a Lady Rebel is about and how we take a lot of pride in representing the university and the city.
How has the arrival of the Aces impacted your program? I mean, it certainly raises the visibility of women's basketball in the community. But how has it impacted the Lady Rebel program?
It's huge. I don't know if you're aware of this, but they practice in our facility. And with that, they said, okay, if you let us practice in your facility during these, few weeks, and it's really not a lot of time, to be honest, it's when we have to take a break, they said, what can we do for you? And what they did for us, they redid our whole locker room.
Oh, wow.
And it is beautiful. It's WNBA locker room. We knocked down some walls. We have lockers in there. We have a huge theater screen that we do our scouting in, and it's quality, and that's because of the Aces. We have a great partnership. We're very proud of that. The players see how hard these WNBA professionals are working, and they want to emulate them. They look up to them.
Is there interaction between so that they can ask them questions and even work out sometimes?
Well, we don't work out together. I don't think they want that.
Right.
But it's good for the people who graduate, who want to continue on and maybe play. If they can play in the WNBA, more power to them. If they want to go overseas and play, Brooke Johnson got an opportunity to play, go to their training camp, and now Brooke is playing in Greece, and she's very proud of that, but wants to come back and hopefully get a shot again with the WNBA. So they've been good to us.
And I don't know if fans realize this, but the ladies' schedule mirrors the men's schedule. So Runner Rebels are playing San Diego State at home on Sunday. I would imagine you're playing Saturday.
We're playing Saturday.
Say, down there at San Diego State.
Day game. We'll be back Saturday night again, which is so nice with the Charters. And we'll be at – I'm excited to come watch the Runnin' Rebels play. I've watched them one time. I think TJ is doing an amazing job. He has his guys working so hard. They're getting after it defensively. You know, when we can't make shots, we got to worry about the defense, and that's what we do. The Lady Rebels, we have to really focus on our D. We're not great shooters at time. But TJ's done a great job, what he's done in such a short amount of time, and he's a great guy. He texted me last night and said congratulations, and I thought, who does this after a game? And so I really wish him nothing but success.
Well, we wish you nothing but success. When's the next home game?
We have a bye next week.
So Colorado State, yeah.
Colorado State, February 1st.
There you go, Colorado State. Well, I wanted KO to say it, but that's okay.
I don't even know, so I'm glad you guys are playing this little game.
It's a week from Saturday. Lady Rebels against the Lady Rams of Colorado State. But the men play Sunday here at the Thomas & Mack, 1 o'clock against San Diego State, 12:30, Runner Rebel warm-up. Curtis and I will have it for you. Please, please come out to the Thomas & Mack. Let's get that place rocking. The Aztecs are really good. Runner Rebels are going to need your help. I want to thank everybody who came out tonight. Thank Coach Otzelberger, our engineer Nick, Jared back in the studio. Thank you very much, KO. Appreciate it. Always good to see you.
Thank you so much for having me. All right,
good luck.
Go Rebels. Let's do this.
For Curtis, this is John. Have a great night, everybody.
Hotel and Casino. You've been listening to the Runnin' Rebels Basketball Coaches Show, brought to you by State Farm. Go with the one that's here to help life go right. Talk to an agent today at 800-STATE-FARM. And by Chevron. It's proven. No gasoline gets better mileage than Chevron with Techron. Care for your car. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Rebel Sports Network.
LeBron and the Lakers head to Philly for a showdown with Ben Simmons and the 76ers. Listen Saturday with tip-off at 5:30 here on ESPN Las Vegas. KWWN Las Vegas.